Well, we interrupt this part of our newscast to go live right here in Tehran as the leader of the Islamic Revolution is about to address the volunteers.
The leader is reciting prayers from the Holy Quran. The leader is reciting prayers from the Holy Quran.
Assalamu alaykum, ya Abu Abdullah.
The leader is reciting Quranic verses and prayers.
Salamullah. أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد من زيارتك السلام على الحسين.
The leader is reciting prayers commemorating Imam Hussein.
على ابن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين على أصحاب الحسين الذين بذلوا مهجهم دون الحسين عليه السلام.
The leader is reciting prayers commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his faithful followers. Today's meeting is a very important one. Basij is the manifestation of the grandeur of the nation and the efficient power of the country. And this session is a meeting of commanders, tens of thousands of Besiege commanders have converged on here. The actually a large number of besiege which comes from the popular force, and this large number shows the grandeur of besiege for all those who are supportive of the country and the government. This is a source of satisfaction, hope, trust. And message is, and also for the ill-wishers and the enemies of the country, message is a source of fear. The coincidence of the Basij week with the period of mourning for the Imam Hussein, which commemorates the large epic of the history of Islam, that is Ashura, this coincidence is an auspicious event. The great event we mean the actually Zainab the Great epic, which is, may God bless her soul, who is actually a complement of the Ashura event. In one sense, we can say that the epic created, that the great Hazrat Zainab created, that epic revived the actually Ashura event. The grandeur of what Hazrat Zainab did, we cannot actually describe that grandeur in comparison with other great events. It is not comparable to other great events of history. That event should be compared to the Ashura event itself. And to be true, to be honest, Ashura event and the event created by Hazrat Zainab are complementary. This great lady of Islam and also of the whole humanity managed to stand up to the whole lot of hardships and problems, and she managed to resist the problems. Even, actually, even her voice didn't begin to shake. A person who was under a lot of hardship and problems. Both in confronting the enemies and also in resisting the hardships and miseries and bitter events of the time, she stood like a strong mountain and resisted, and she became a role model for others, and she became the pioneer, a role model for others. In the Kufa bazaar at that time, she was being held captive. At that time, she recited those prayers. She recited that ceremony, which includes prayers, and actually that ceremony was in that ceremony she criticized the people of Kufa at that time who were not loyal to Imam Hussein and turned their back to Imam Hussein, turned their back on Imam Hussein. The prayers in her ceremony are very strong, very meaningful. And they have, those prayers have very deep meaning. In that situation, she was strong as Imam Ali. She got her message across. It was, and she managed to influence the hearts and minds of people, and of course to influence the history. That famous sermon went down in history while talking to the people, while she was being held captive, and also in front of the despot of the time. She spoke so strongly that also both in front of Ibn Ziyad, the despot of the time, and also a few weeks after that, in front of Yazid, another despot of the time, her sermon, she spoke so strongly that she both humiliated the enemy and also she actually managed to annul all those problems inflicted by the enemy. Actually, they wanted to defeat the household of the Prophet Muhammad, but to no avail. Actually, Hazrat Zainab is the epitome of dignity. Also, as Imam Hussein was also the epitome of dignity on Ashura Day. The way he looked at the events was a different look from how others looked at the events. All those hardships and problems imposed by the enemy, Imam Hussein said, that Imam Hussein resisted all those. Imam Hussein said, whatever I saw was beautiful, whatever I saw was martyrdom, but it was in the path of God in order to preserve and protect Islam. And that martyrdom set in motion a great wave in history, so the Islamic Ummah would understand how they should move forward, in what path they should set foot, and how they should resist problems and the enemy. That was the great epic of Ashura and Hazrat Zainab as well. This is the dignity brought by Hazrat Zainab. Hazrat Zainab is one of the greatest people, closest people to God, and she managed to protect, to endear and protect Islam and the Holy Quran. Of course, we are not we don't have that much as much perseverance, and we cannot say that it's very hard to say that she's a role model for us. It's very hard for us to be on a par with her. However, our movement, our actions must be in such a way, we must be in such a way that we follow in her footsteps. Our perseverance, the dignity of Islam, the dignity of the Islamic human beings, the Islamic society, the same thing that God Almighty has bestowed upon us with Islamic teachings, and actually God has instructed the imams and all of us to follow Islamic precepts. What, first of all, I would like to mention briefly for you, dear Besigees, dear Besigee youth, is that one of the factors that contribute to this patience, contributed to Hazrat Zainab's patience and boosted her patience and also patience in other people of God was honesty. Honesty. Actually, it is to honestly swear allegiance to God, to have an honest heart, and to act in the way of God with honesty. This is very important. In the Holy Quran, this honesty is something which is a must for imams and prophets, for all prophets and imams. The leader is reciting prayers from the Holy Quran. We asked you, Prophet Muhammad, to renew allegiance to us. We got allegiance from Prophet Moses and all other prophets. And this allegiance is a very strong and deep-rooted allegiance. And the result of this allegiance, this divine allegiance, is that the great prophets are questioned by God concerning how honest they have been in swearing that allegiance. Our prophets and other divine prophets, they have to be answerable to God how honestly they swore that allegiance to God. Honesty is very important. This is for prophets and imams. And as for the ordinary people and other faithful people, the leader is reciting Quranic verses.
ليجزي الله الصادقين بصدقهم ويعذب المنافقين إن شاء.
As for great prophets and imams, actually in Holy Quran, we call that, compared to honest people, the Holy Quran says pagans. Actually, and also those two-faced people are those who are against Muslims. And we will also be held accountable for that, how honest we have been about the allegiance we have made to God. And in this Quranic verse, this allegiance that the Muslim people have made to God, and some faithful people actually have remained committed to their allegiance, They have remained firm behind their allegiance. This allegiance is the same concept which has been mentioned in this Quranic verse. All of us should pay attention to these points. They had made allegiance to God Almighty. They had promised not to turn their back on the enemy and escape. In confronting the enemy, they had promised, they had vowed to remain steadfast. And while confronting the enemy, turning back on the enemy and escaping and fleeing the front line, the battlefield, is one of the things which has been mentioned by the Quran that this should not happen in a battlefield. In a military action and military war, and also in political war and economic war, in anywhere where there is a battlefield, while confronting the enemy, we need to resist and stand up to the enemy. Your determination should overcome the enemy's resolve. Your determination and resolve should overcome that of the enemy. And this will happen, and this is possible. The people are chanting the slogans saying God is great, Khamenei is the leader. In any jihad or battlefield or war, turning back on the enemy and escaping the battlefield, it is forbidden in Islam and as mentioned by Holy Quran. Well, we used the term epic leniency. Some people thought that means we have quitted our ideals and we have given up the ideals of the Islamic establishment. And some enemies used that as a pretext to say and to make the Islamic establishment go back on its principles and give up its principles. These are not true. These are misunderstandings. Epic leniency means artistic maneuvering in order to achieve the goals. It means in any way and in any way possible, one way or another, a person who is following in the footsteps of God, he or she will move forward toward its Islamic objectives. While moving toward Islamic objectives, they should use diverse methods in order to achieve his goals. The leader is reciting Quranic verses. Any move, whether move forward, whether move backward, is just like a battlefield. In any such move, we need to be looking to attain our predetermined objectives. There are objectives in the Islamic establishment. One of these objectives, at any stage, the Islamic system follows one of these objectives in order to reach the perfection point, in order to improve and promote the great Islamic civilization. Every effort should be made to achieve the objective at a certain stage. Of course, defining different phases and stages, it is a phased move. It will be done in a phased move, and there are people who can guide, and intellectuals and people in charge, officials. They have determined these phases and these stages, and then a collective move will begin toward the objective. Everybody should make efforts so that every move at every stage will lead to the attainment of the objective. This is the correct system of moving toward objectives. All activists in the politics arena, this is something which should be remembered by all those who are in the political arena, all those people, you dear besiegers, besiege activists, also you should bear that in mind. When we say we want to move forward, does that mean that we are actually after wars? And does it mean bellicosity? Does it mean that the Islamic system is going to actually enter in to challenge all the nations, all the world? Does it mean that? Sometimes we hear some statements that the enemies of the Islamic nation, including the vicious person in the Middle East, the Israeli regime. The people are chanting death to Israel. They are chanting down with Israel. They challenge that, they say that Iran is a threat to the whole world. No, this is not true. This is a statement by the enemy. This is exactly opposite what is true and what our Islamic principles. Threatening the world, those are threatening the world who are vicious powers, who are only showing wickedness, including the Israeli regime, the fabricated Israeli regime and its supporters. Islam, the Islamic establishment, actually has learned a lesson from the Holy Quran, has learned a lesson from Imam Ali, has learned a lesson from the Prophet Muhammad. That lesson is something else. Justice and kindness, that is the lesson. Imam Ali said, be kind to everybody. Either they're your Islamic brothers, or anyway, he or she might be a human being. He is a human being. This is the logic of Islam. Be kind to everybody. We want to serve the whole humanity, all human beings. We want to be kind to everybody, with all humans. We want to be kind to all humans. We want to have friendly relations with all nations, even with the American nation. Although the U.S. government is a hostile government and is an ill-wisher government and is hostile towards the Islamic to Iranian nation and Islamic and the Iranian government, but we are not hostile to the American nation. They are like other nations in the world. And what is actually, the despotism and hegemonism, this is something which is against the Islamic establishment. Our policies are against and in contradiction with hegemonism and despotism. We are against despotism and hegemonism. We fight hegemonism and despotism. Despotism is a word mentioned in Quran and mentioned to refer to people like Pharaoh and ill-wishers and all despotic groups which have been there throughout history. And despotism has existed up to this day. And the base and the structure of hegemonism and despotism has been the same throughout the history. Of course, they have used different methods and techniques. And today, the despotic system exists, led by the United States of American government. Hegemony or despotism, we should get to know the specifications of despotism and hegemony. We need to know in what way they are set, they are making activities. Then we will be able to prudently to adjust our behavior vis-a-vis them. We should be prudent if we are against any imprudent behavior in all areas. We believe we believe in all domains, in all plannings, and in all policy makings, whether collective and public, collective, we need to act with wisdom and prudence. If we do not get to know who the enemy is, who the friend is, if we cannot tell friend and foe, if we do not know who hegemonic powers are, who despots are, how can we be able to move forward with prudence and wisdom? How can we have correct planning? So we need to get to know them. When it comes to hegemony and despotism, what I'm going to mention, I would like to mention a few points regarding despotism. They are but a few of the features of the despotic system which exists in today's world, and also in many cases, those features are the same as what existed in the past. One of the specifications of the despotic system is that despots are self-important and arrogant. Those who are either actually leading the despotic systems, those who are behind despotic systems, or maybe a number of countries, those who are leading this system, when they consider themselves as they consider that their group is superior to other nations. So when they think that they are the pivots and they believe that they are superior to all others, then this will lead to a dangerous and wrong equation in international relations. The result would be, when they consider themselves as arrogant and self-important, and when they consider themselves as the pivots and superior to others, then what the result will be? Then they reserve the right to interfere in the internal affairs of other countries and in the affairs of other nations. In their ideas, what they consider a value, they believe believe that everybody must succumb to their will and promote the values that they think are values. If somebody is against their values, then they will reserve the right to impose their will on them and put pressure on other nations. This self-importance and arrogance will lead to claims that actually they will claim that they are the superintendents of other nations. They believe that they are the managers of the world. They are the masters of the world. That's what they believe. Some comments have been made by certain American statesmen. They talk about, they refer to the American government as if the U.S. is the superintendent and is the guardian of all nations. We cannot let that happen. We cannot let that happen, let this approach. And as for our region, they talk about our region as if they are the owners of this region. They talk about the Israeli regime as if all the nations in this region have but to accept this fabricated regime. With independent, their behavior toward independent nations and governments is such that actually they don't have the right to live. This self-importance and arrogance, and they consider themselves as being superior to others and having a special position, this approach is the greatest, the biggest problem that facing the despotic system. And the result would be another specification, another feature of the hegemonic system will be that they do not actually accept right. They don't accept right words, and they do not recognize the rights of nations. This means they're against whatever which is right. In international equations, it has happened a lot of times. A right word or a statement has been made, but the U.S. does not accept that right statement, and they reject that statement through different methods. They do not accept right words and statements. An example of that is that the current developments, the developments facing the world, and also the developments surrounding the Iranian nuclear activities. There is something right about it. If somebody accepts right things and somebody is a logical one and accepts logic when he sees something logical, they should accept that. But hegemonic powers don't accept that. They hear right words, but they don't accept right words. As the rights of, they even do not recognize the rights of nations, that nations have the right to choose. Nations have the right to determine, have to choose the kind of economy that they favor, have to choose the kind of policy that they like. They don't recognize that right for nations. They believe that they should impose their will on others. Another result which will emanate from this is another a specification of hegemony and despotism, that they consider crimes against nations as legal, and they condone crime. They turn a blind eye to crimes committed against nations. This is one of the biggest problems of despotism. I mean, in the recent years, many dangerous weapons have been made, and those weapons are in the hands of despotic powers, and those weapons are threaten the lives of human beings. Any person, any nation which do not listen to them and they don't follow them, then they don't value their lives. There are a lot of examples in that regard. One example is that the way that hegemonic powers treated and treat the actually Native Americans, the country whose resource and whose financial resources, geographical situation, and everything is in the hands of non-Native Americans in that region. So there have been some Native people in America, and they treated those Native Americans so violently and so inhumanely that this is one of the dark points of the new American history. Many actually the killings that have been committed, and the same thing happened in Australia by Britons. They persecuted the Native people in Australia. They hunted them like kangaroos, just for fun. They didn't value the lives of those Native Australians. This is another example. There are many other examples which even in their history books, many of them have been mentioned. Another example is the chemical bombardment of two Japanese cities in 1945.
یعنی سال 1124 شمسی ما
two Japanese cities came under atomic bombardment, and those cities were destroyed. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed. And many more over the years up to now, they have, because of that they have been suffering birth defects over the years, which emanate from that chemical bombardment, and still they are suffering today. There is no, and they didn't have any logic for that action. Nice and easy, they dropped an atomic bomb on those cities. So far, only two times atomic bombs have been used, and that was the two bombs dropped on those two cities. And today, they consider themselves as the guardians of the atomic issue in the world, and they would like this issue to slip into oblivion and be forgotten, but it won't be forgotten. They didn't value the lives of people. The lives of people have no value for these people. So despotic systems commit crimes very easily. In Vietnam, they killed people. In Iraq, their security companies and other contractors like Blackwater, they committed crimes in Iraq. In Pakistan, with drones, still they are committing crimes with drones. In Afghanistan, they bombard people and they continue to commit crimes. Anywhere they can, and anywhere which they can serve their interests, they will commit crimes, including torture, killings. The Guantanamo prison, still there are inmates there at the Guantanamo Bay detention facility. It has been for 10 or 11 years now that this detention center, which belongs to the U.S., a number of people from different parts of the world have been charged, and they are, without any trial, they are being held there under very bad and abysmal conditions, under torture. They are being held there
در عراق
in Iraq the Abu Ghraib prison was one of American prisons. They would unleash dogs on the inmates and torture them. They easily plunder the riches of nations. Kidnapping, taking black people hostage, that is another very bad, actually, instances which has happened in history. Actually, black people, they don't like the despotic regime. Actually, one of the key points is that the case of slavery, actually, they would use them African people in Africa as slaves. They would bring ships from the Atlantic Ocean and countries like Gambia and other Western African countries, they would keep the ships there, then they would go at gunpoint, and they would go using different kinds of guns and all that. They would go and by force, they would enslave people, men, women, old and young. They would enslave them, capture them, and under very tough conditions, they would carry them back with those ships to America in order to use them as slaves. And they would use them. A free person who is living in his or her town, in his or her home, they would enslave them. They would use them as slaves. Now, black people who are living in America, they are from that generation. For several centuries, many things have been mentioned in books, history books. There is a book called Roots, The Roots, which reveals part of those crimes. How can one forget these crimes? Still, discrimination exists between the white people and black people in America. One of the features of the despotic system, another specification, is deception and hypocrisy. Deception and hypocrisy. The same crimes that we mentioned here, all of those crimes, that they try to actually justify those crimes, and they try to show make the impression that those crimes were just aimed at serving the people. This is one of the things that they do. The despotic system aims to actually to rule the world, and they use this method, the method of actually justifying the crimes and trying to make the impression that those crimes were committed just to serve the people. The attack, the chemical bombardment of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those two bombs, Americans, they apologized. You know how they justified that? They apologized and they said, although the two bombs dropped on those cities, that led to the killing of tens of thousands of people. However, those killings, whether thousands or hundreds of or tens of thousands of people who were killed, it came at the price of the end of the Second World War. So they said that was the price for ending the Second World War. If we hadn't dropped those bombs, that's what Americans say, if we hadn't dropped those bombs, then the World War II would have continued, and then in that case maybe millions of people would have been killed. So we served the humanity with that. You see, this is the way they are justifying that chemical bombardment. This is in their official statements. Now 60 years or 65 years on since then, repeatedly they are making the same statements over and over again. This is one of those deceptive and hypocritical statements made by them, and one of the outrageous lies told, but which are told by despotic system. These bombs were dropped in the summer of 1945. It was the crime was committed in the summer of 1945. 4 months before that, that is in the spring of 1945, Hitler, who was the main pillar of the war, he had committed suicide, and even 2 days before that, Mussolini, the then Italian president, who was also involved in the war, he had been arrested, and the World War had practically come to an end. There was no war at that time, and Japan, which was also involved in the war, 2 months earlier, Japan had announced that it would surrender. It was ready to surrender. So at that time, there was no war, actually, but those bombs were dropped. Why? Because they wanted to test those bombs. Those bombs had to be tested somehow. It was a weapon that they had made, and they wanted to test it. Where were they supposed to test that? It was the best opportunity. Under the pretext of war, they dropped those bombs on the innocent people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki under the pretext of war. Then that was a test. Then they could see how it would function, how the bombs would function. This is the deceptive image, their deceptive image. They claim that they support humanity. They shot down Iranian airliner in the sky, almost 300 passengers on board, they were killed. Then even they don't apologize, and the person who was behind that crime, they even grant a medal to the person who was behind that crime. People are chanting death to America. Down with the USA. As you have heard recently, in recent weeks, you have heard that Americans, from president to others, they kicked up a fuss over the use of chemical weapons in Syria. They accused Syria of using that. I'm not going to judge whether or not the government used it or terrorists used it. Of course, evidence shows that terrorists used it. Anyway, I'm not going to judge that. But they said that using chemical weapons is a red line. They repeated it for 10 times or maybe more. The U.S. officials repeated that our red line is using chemical weapons. And this very government of the U.S., in the wars which actually, in the wars, in the chemical attacks of Saddam against Iran, in that time, the U.S., neither did they oppose those chemical attacks on Iran. They offered, but they offered 500 chemical materials to Saddam, which could be used to be turned into mustard gas. Still, some of our people are suffering. Made 500 dangerous chemical weapons available to Saddam, which could be turned into mustard gas. Saddam bought that amount of chemical materials from the U.S. The U.S. helped Baghdad. Of course, Saddam had bought chemicals from other sources as well, but the U.S. provided Saddam Hussein with 500 tons of chemicals, deadly chemicals, which could be converted into the mustard gas. That was what Saddam bought from the U.S. and used it And later, when they wanted to issue a resolution against Saddam, then the U.S. tried to block that move. This is their hypocritical behavior. Now they say chemical weapons are a red line, but at that time, chemical weapons, because chemical weapons were being used against an independent Islamic system, because they were being used against a nation who does not succumb to U.S. pressures, then at that time it was allowed. These are part of the specifications of the hegemonic and despotic system. Of course, there are other features. They are bellicose. They try to sow discord among nations. They confront independent nations. Even they confront their own nations when they want to serve their own interests. During the Iraqi war against Iran, they provided any help possible to Baghdad, to the Baghdad regime. The chemical weapons were just an example. Iraqi intelligence chief at that time, he said that I would go to the U.S. embassy in Baghdad at that time three times a week, and they would provide us with every information, satellite information concerning the movements of the Iranian troops, and they would provide us with actually information regarding the movement of Iranian troops. So we said that the Islamic establishment is now facing the hegemonism and despotism with these features. So the Islamic establishment is not facing and confronting people and nations. The Islamic establishment is facing despotism. Since the great prophets of Islam until now, it has been the same case has existed. The good has been against evil. Why? Why today's confrontation between the Islamic establishment and despotism? Why is it that? Because despotism, the despotic system, is not able to tolerate an Islamic system like the Islamic Republic of Iran. Because the Islamic Republic was basically created in protest to despotism. The Islamic Revolution in Iran emerged in protest to hegemonic elements and despotic elements. The revolution took shape in protest at the despotic system and the Islamic establishment. The Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic was established based on the same concept, and it grew and became stronger and challenged the logic of despotism. The despotic system cannot tolerate us unless the Iranian nation, Iranian youth, Iranian activists, all those who, for any reason, whether for an un-Islamic reason, those who believe and they are loyal to their country and their homeland, they should try to disappoint the enemy. For the despotic system today, for the U.S., it is very difficult for the U.S. government today to see in this sensitive region in the world, in West Asia, one of the most sensitive regions in the world, both politically, both economically. And the developments in the region influence all international developments. In this sense, the region, it cannot see that a nation, a system, an Islamic system has emerged which considers itself as actually connect, actually which considers itself as independent from hegemonic powers. It moves forward independently, and they are actually against this system with all these problems, but the Islamic system weathers all the problems, all the existing problems, and by their own admission, Iran has challenged American influence in this region, and Iran is promoting its influence in the region and is a role model for the regional nations. This is very hard for them to tolerate. They want to say that the existence of nations is based on their dependence on the U.S. Now there is a nation, and a nation has emerged, which is not only not dependent on the enemy, but it has remained untouched by the American animosity. And the U.S. has been doing whatever it can against us, but to no avail. The Iranian nation, the Iranian system has been growing and has been strengthening since the very beginning of the revolution. The U.S., different presidents of the U.S., all of the U.S. Presidents since the revolution, it is not limited to one certain president. They are all the same. The measures they adopted against us since the beginning of the Islamic revolution, the animosities that they have had against us during, they have been done during different presidents of the U.S., but they are all of the same nature. First of all, they tried to provoke the ethnic groups inside the country. Then they orchestrated the coup d'etat. They tried to orchestrate the coup d'etat. Then they made Iraq attack Iran. And after that, they helped the Saddam Hussein regime during the war. And then they slapped sanctions against us. After that, they tried to actually mobilize all developments in the world against the Islamic establishment. During different, these things have happened during different 10 years of different presidents of the U.S. Even now, the current U.S. president, in the actually sedition movement 4 years ago, one of the social networks which could instigate that sedition movement, this social network asked that social network to delay its repair and maintenance work. They were hoping to be able to use social networks, Facebook and Twitter and all that, and all other media to actually oust the Islamic establishment. This was actually, but they didn't let that social network to do its maintenance work at that juncture, and they instructed that social network to work against the Islamic establishment. They mobilized whatever they had against the Islamic establishment at that time. Sanctions is one of the tools they are using. Sanctions are one of the tools that they are using. They believe that sanctions are used to break, to defeat Iranians, but their mistake is that they have not yet gotten to know the Iranian nation. They are not aware of the power of unity among the Iranian people. Their mistake is that they have not learned from their past mistakes, so they hope to be able to, by slapping sanctions and exerting pressure and all that, they hope to be able to bring the Iranian nation to their knees. Pay attention, please. Chant those slogans in due time. Please listen now. What is For the Islamic establishment of Iran, what has been a constant experience over the past 35 years is that the only reason, the only factor, the only thing which has helped confront the confront the enemy's pressures is the power and the might of the nation, the national might. This is the only reason which can push, the only factor which can push back the enemy. Of course, the enemy will use all its all tools available to it, including sanctions, and it has used the tool of sanctions. We need to know the path which can, what the path is which can lead us to our objective. Let me tell you one sentence about Basij. Then I will mention another brief point about the current foreign policy affairs of our country. As for Basij, Basij, as we said, is a source of dignity for the country and the establishment. Why? Because Basij means the presence of the general public in different fields of activity, in key fields of activity. Anywhere which the general public is present for any government, any country, this presence, when the people are present, when you have the popular support, then in that case victory is certain and definite. The countries are defeated and they suffer blows when they don't have the support of their people, or when they are not, they don't have unity. Anywhere that people have been on the scene and they have maintained their unity, in that case their progress and victory are certain and are sure to happen. Basij is a manifestation of this popular presence on the scene and the close bonds between the people, and that's the way we should look at Basij. Basij, when I talked about honesty at the beginning of my remarks, Basij it has passed its test of honesty during the eight-year Iraq imposed war, during the Holy Defense era. In those times, we were under a lot of, we had a lot of difficulties, but Basij passed that test very well. And after that, until now, Basij has passed its honesty test with success. The Basij organization has shown, actually all Basij units have shown that they are honest. Of course, Basij, I believe, Basij is not limited to this, the number of those who are members of the Basij organization. There are many people whose hearts are with you, and they admire you, and they respect you, they appreciate your efforts, but they are not members of the Basij. They are also considered Basijis. The people who accept your values and respect those values, those who appreciate your services and your efforts, they respect those efforts. In our viewpoint, they are Basijis as well. Presence on the scene is one of the most important things for Basij, one of the most capabilities of Basij. Actually, Basij can be of great help in solving problems. Today, fortunately, within the Basij body, we can see very top scientific, artistic, and social figures, also political figures and social activists, people who are influential among the people. We have a lot of them in the within the Basij body. Basij has always been growing and from now on it should continue to grow. I recommend that we should try to upgrade the capabilities of the BESIG organization. There are some, of course, moral requirements, some practical requirements, of course. We need some moral requirements. It means we need to improve Islamic ethics inside ourselves and inside Islamic moralities. These ethics include being devoted, being patient, and being tolerant. Among these ethical features are being to be actually down to earth. These features are the ones which we need to improve and promote in ourselves. There are some behavioral requirements, including the kind behavior that we have in dealing with the people, in dealing with our environment, in dealing with the society and human beings. Imam Sadiq, may God bless his soul, told his followers, act in such a way among the people, act in such a way that whenever somebody sees you, he would say that these are the honest followers of Imam Sadiq. May God bless them. And actually, they should be sources of honor. The behavior of every single one of you BESIGs, your honest elements and members of BESIG, the behavior of every single one of you with the people from all walks of life, as I said, many people in the true sense of the word, they are BESIGs. Your behavior towards them should be in such a way that they say, okay, see, they are the true, actually, children of the Islamic establishment. They are actually the sources of kindness and respect for the Islamic establishment and for the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's the way you should, how your behavior toward people should be. These are parts of the social and behavioral and ethical requirements. So they told you, you should promote the way you behave towards people, your kindness, friendship with the environment, with people, and act seriously on all fronts, both on the scientific front and on the public front, and also on the political front, on the production front. Anywhere you are present, act seriously without feeling tired, and also avoid lassitude. Try to move forward and act seriously. You know, this great organization, tens of thousands of BESIG commanders have converged here. It's a very big organization. This body, this organization can, in the true sense of the word, help the country, push the country forward in different areas, and can be a source of stability, a source of honor for the nation, and which it is, of course. Today, the BESIG is a source of grandeur and source of honor for the establishment. And another point about the recent, issues, some bickerings which have existed in the foreign policy arena, nuclear talks and all that. First of all, I do insist on support for officials which have been doing that. I support the government and all the officials involved in that. I support all officials, local officials, foreign officials. It is our duty and our responsibility, all governments. I myself have been involved in executive jobs. I have been in the field. I can feel how heavy the responsibility and the task is. I know it is. Running a country, it is a very tough job. So these officials, they need help, and I will help and support them. This is for sure, and this is something definite. On the other hand, I insist on the stabilization of Iranians' rights, including nuclear rights. People are chanting, nuclear energy is our inalienable right. We do insist that we will not step back an iota from our rights. Of course, we do not intervene in the details of these talks. There are certain red lines, there are limits. These limits have to be observed. The red lines have to be observed. We have told officials about, and they are instructed to actually abide by those limits, and they should not be afraid by whatever the enemy says. Everybody should know that the sanctions imposed against the Iranian nation, mainly they emanate from the grudges that the U.S. despotism has had. It is a kind of American grudge, we can call it. It is a deep-rooted grudge. They intend to ratchet up the pressure on Iran, hoping that they will probably be able to bring the Iranians to their knees. But they are mistaken. Iranians will succumb to nobody under pressure. You have not recognized this nation well. This is a nation which, thanks to God's help, can withstand pressures and your threats and pressures. This nation will turn your pressures and threats into opportunities. This is something that the Iranian nation will do by God's grace. Regarding the economic decision makings and programming, we have had certain weak points in our decision making in the economic arena, and these weak points have made the enemy think that it can pressurize Iranians by sanctions. But this is an opportunity for us to get to know our weak points and remove those weak points. And sanctions are a non-starter for the U.S. They are not effective. I think they themselves know that. And the reason... The reason why we say they know that sanctions are not effective is that they even actually use military threats in addition to sanctions. So if you could reach your objective with sanctions alone, why are you using military threats? This shows that sanctions are a non-starter and they cannot reach their objectives through sanctions. They have to use military threats as well. Of course, their military threats are a disgusting act, actually. But anyway, their officials, presidents, and all that, instead of making military threats, you'd better go improve your dilapidated economy. You'd better do something to prevent a two-week shutdown of the government. Try to pay back your debts and all that. try to improve your economic situation. They should know that the Iranian nation, as I said, with all nations of the world, with all people of the world, we respect all nations, all people of the world, but with anybody, which one, but with aggressors, but we will behave aggressor in such a way. We will slap aggressors in the face in such a way that we'll never ever forget it.
در مقابل رژیم صهیونیستی
vis-à-vis the Israeli regime, vis-à-vis the Zionist capitalist system, they actually take it upon themselves to sometimes make some comments on all that. And even these comments, this is something, this will bring only humiliation to them. The Israeli regime is, in fact, a regime whose pillars are very, very, actually weak. The Israeli regime is doomed to failure and doomed to annihilation. The Israeli regime, the Zionist regime, is an imposed regime. It emerged with force, through force, and no phenomenon which has emerged by force will not continue to exist. And this regime won't continue to exist either. Those who actually support the Israeli regime, actually the Zionist capitalist system, those who support this regime, actually their support for the Israeli regime will only discredit them, and some discredit them, and some European governments, unfortunately, they go and actually kiss up to the Israeli regime, and they support the Israeli regime. Unfortunately, Israeli officials cannot be called humans. They are like animals, some of them. They go and kiss up to the Israeli regime. They humiliate themselves and their nations before the Israeli regime. In Europe, the Egyptian nation, once they gained political credit, because the then president of France at that time did not allow Britain, because Britain was affiliated to the US, did not allow Britain to enter the European common market, just because Britain was affiliated to the US. This was a source of credit for France at that time. Around the world at that time, the French government was had a very good credit because it stood up to the US and did not let Britain to enter the European common market because of its affiliation with the US. Now the same very country, its officials are not only succumbing to the US, but also they are actually kneeling before the Israeli regime. This will bring humiliation to the French nation. Of course, they have to solve the problem. Let me make a statement to you, the younger generation. Be aware that undoubtedly the future, there is a bright and promising future ahead for the country, and the promising and bright future of the country belongs to you. You will be able to take your nation and country to the apex of honor, and by God's grace, you will be able to be a role model for the new Islamic civilization. In order for you to be able to discharge these responsibilities, you need to improve piety and religion and all that. You need to actually have purity of soul, improve the purity of your souls. You need to promote that purity of soul and religion. Today's youth need religion, piety, science, and actually good working conditions, honesty, social services, and also sports. These are the things which today's younger generation needs. And you, dear Basijis, hope God willing you will be able to help that happen. May God Almighty endow blessings upon the Iranian nation. May God help the Iranian nation conquer the highest peaks of honor. May God bless the soul of the late Imam Khomeini. May God bless the souls of our dear martyrs. May God hasten the emergence of the Imam Mahdi. May God give us the honor to be among the followers of Imam Mahdi. May God bless you all.
Greetings, everybody. That was leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, addressing a large gathering of Basij commanders and voluntary forces in the Grand Musalla in Tehran. On the occasion of Basij Week or Volunteers Week, the leader explained the Basij as the manifestation of the grandeur of the nation and power within the country. Now, coming off the mourning period of Ashura, which commemorates the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam and grandson of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, Ayatollah Khamenei also spoke of the position of Hazrat Zainab, the sister of Imam Hussein, of how her symbol and symbolic resistance should be a role model for others, alluding to her sermon in Kufa, which is described as strong as her father's, Imam Ali. Also, the leader said that resistance is required in any battle, and that we want to have friendly relations with all nations, and we are not hostile towards the American nation. Ayatollah Khamenei also said that Israel and others who issue anti-Iran threats only show their wickedness, and that we must act with wisdom in dealing with the enemies. The leader also said that, speaking in condemnation of Western countries, he stated that the policies of certain Western countries, he stated that despotic systems commit crimes with no hesitation. In that regard, he pointed to the dark points in the history of some hegemonic powers, the modern history of America and the treatment of the Native Americans, and the violations of the British that was carried out against the Australian Aboriginals, also emphasizing that the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the final days of World War II was a great crime against humanity. He also pointed to Vietnam, Iraq, Pakistan, and the torturing of prisoners in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib prisons, which were all brought up in the in his address about the violations and crimes of hegemonic powers. He also censured the United States for supporting and aiding then-Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran, as the U.S. provided Saddam Hussein with chemical material, and Saddam Hussein carried out chemical weapons attacks against Iran during the war. Regarding the ongoing nuclear negotiations, he stated that I give my full support to the government and officials involved in the nuclear talks, but I also insist on the recognition of the Iranian nation's rights, including the nation's nuclear energy rights. That was a brief summation of the comments of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in the Iranian capital, Tehran. For now, we're going to return to the normal course of programming here on Press TV.